Good morning. This is Brian Madden on Wednesday, April 5th, 2006. You're listening to Brian Madden Live, the internet radio show for Citrix, Terminal Server, server-based, and thin client computing technologies. And as we said on Monday, also now the application virtualization landscape. And application virtualization will actually be the primary topic that we talk about on today's show. I want to talk a little bit about virtualization and how virtualization is relevant, if at all, to our part of the industry, which primarily is the server-based computing industry. A little later in the show also, we're going to talk with Gus Pinto. He's the creator of frameworks.com, and he's written several free utilities that are available for download that help out Citrix internal server administrators. A colleague of his also writing for frameworks.com is Rich Krusko, and Rich has actually written a 34-page paper talking about step-by-step processes on how you can virtualize a Citrix Access Gateway. Also, on Monday's show, I asked for your feedback and comments regarding the direction that we should take these podcasts, and we'll close out with a review of some of your thoughts and some of the ideas that we have about future shows. But I'd like to move on to our first topic today, and again, that first topic is application virtualization. On Monday's show, I kind of laughed at Citrix a little bit because I said they're sort of jumping on to the virtualization bandwagon. What Citrix has done last October is they announced that their presentation server products would be thought of or viewed of as application virtualization products. And what they mean is they're not changing any names or anything like that. They just mean that they view that these products are for the purposes of application virtualization. Now, some people feel like this is Citrix just wanting to jump onto this virtualization bandwagon. And other people kind of feel like this is something like, no, it really makes sense. Well, I'd like to kind of talk about that. I guess the first way to kick off this conversation is actually going to be to play a recording that I made at iForum when this announcement was made. So iForum was last October in 2005 out there in Las Vegas. And the way these things work is there's the main keynote and there's thousands of people listening to the keynote. And then this people who deliver the keynote, Citrix executives, go back and have a press conference. And so the press conference is a Q&A where people in the audience can ask questions. And I was in the audience and I actually asked Mark Templeton, Citrix's CEO, about this virtualization announcement. And so I'm going to play a clip right now. It's about 2 minutes long. This clip is from the press conference last October, and it starts out with me asking the question to Mark Templeton, and then we will listen to his response. So here's that clip. Question about virtualization. I heard today, I think for the first time, that Citrix, that you guys are using the term virtualization or virtualized applications in the context of presentation server. And so I wonder if that's something that you're sort of doing intentionally, in the sense that virtualization means different things to different people, and of course there's conversations about should MetaFrame be virtualized and all that kind of stuff. But is that something where we can sort of, from a messaging standpoint, expect moving forward that virtualized applications to Citrix means presentation server?
Yes, Brian. And as a matter of fact, I think, unfortunately, most there's a lot of confusion around virtualization out there today. And having, I guess I'm celebrating my 30th or something like that year in the software industry, starting in with groupware, moving into document imaging, and then into workflow. I understand what happens when a term gets hot, and certainly you all, help these things along. And then typically software companies jump into a space and try to co-opt an idea, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense. So when we think about virtualization, we think that it's very simply, disconnecting, separating the physical from the logical. And you can do that with virtual networks, virtual identity, virtual machines, virtual applications, virtual desktops. All right, and we're sort of playing in multiples of virtualization categories. And some others are sort of jumping in there to confuse things, which we think that we can help customers get clarity around virtualization technologies, and especially application virtualization, which we think we have the largest franchise.
It's interesting to listen to Templeton's response to that question because in a lot of ways, I really agree with what he's saying. I mean, he talks about virtualization being the separation of the physical from the logical. And of course, in that vein, then he's exactly right. Presentation server is virtualization because the application is virtualized on the back end as far as the user is concerned. The user no longer has to worry about the application being physically installed on their client device. And so in a sense, it's virtualized because the application is sort of available to them wherever they are and from whatever client and everything like that. So on the one hand, I really understand and agree with what he's saying. On the other hand, though, it's interesting because from my perspective and sort of the IT engineer's perspective, virtualization to us means a very different thing. I mean, yes, it's still about separating the physical from the logical, but the main difference is that we think of virtualization like VMware and Microsoft Virtual Server, and so we think of virtualization kind of more on the back-end server side of things. So application virtualization, as far as what presentation server does, is more of like a front-end virtualization, whereas we hear virtualization and think of virtualization as something that happens with VMware back at the server level. I guess at some levels, maybe it's like, well, who cares? Who cares whether Citrix is calling it virtualization or not? And, you know, really the point of where I'm going with this and what kind of got me thinking is I'm really starting to almost become overwhelmed and get sick of all this talk about virtualization. And it seems like every blog, every community website out there, everyone who had anything to do with Citrix or terminal server or server-based computing is now suddenly all gung-ho about virtualization. And so that, to me, poses one question. If I'm not all hopped up on virtualization, is that because I think virtualization is a fad and I don't want to just follow the fad? Or is it because virtualization is really the future direction that things are moving into? And in this case, I'm being stubborn and old school and actually sort of damaging myself by not jumping onto this virtualization bandwagon. Because on the one hand, you know, we don't want to all follow the fads and don't want to kind of get down into one direction that isn't meaningful and intentional for us. But on the other hand, if virtualization really is the direction where things are going, we don't want to be so stubborn that in 5 years we're still saying, oh, virtualization is just a fad, when in fact everyone around us is virtualizing everything. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that virtualization is not here to stay, because I definitely feel like virtualization is the future of IT. And I really love what VMware is doing, and I love what companies like Softricity and Alteryx are doing to virtualize the applications. I love what companies like Ardence are doing to virtualize the operating systems. I love what Intel and AMD are doing, where they're building this virtualization technology into the CPUs themselves. So I think virtualization in the context of allowing multiple virtual machines to run within one physical host machine, I think that's here to stay, and that's going to be really, really big. But what my question is how do we as a community make the jump from that kind of virtualization into the Citrix and application level virtualization? Because it seems to me that the application level virtualization, the server virtualization, and Citrix are not all the same thing. So one of the things I've been saying for a long time is that the whole purpose of IT is just to provide applications to end users. And really, our focus is about applications. And in the old days, that meant using things like SMS and ZenWorks to push out applications. And then Citrix came along and server-based computing came along. And that gave us a better way to push out applications to users in that the users could come to us and we could keep everything in-house and that sort of stuff. And so I think that at this level, application virtualization is just the next layer on top of that. So now we are making applications available to users in the most intelligent way possible. And if that means that we build a server-based computing environment, then so be it. And if that means that we have to push out applications to the users via a Softricity type thing and virtualize those applications locally within the client, then that's fine too. But getting back to the virtualization at the VMware and kind of hardware level, I really wonder, is this something that is appropriate for us to talk about? So as I said, the fact that all the other sites in the industry are talking about virtualization in the same conversation as when they're talking about server-based computing and Citrix, I wonder, is that a direction that we should go? Should we look more at virtualization in VMware, or should we just focus on the applications themselves and focus on application virtualization, but not kind of be drawn into the mire and the muck of virtualizing the entire hardware and getting into hardware and blades and all this kind of stuff? So this is something I guess, again, I'm curious about your thoughts on this, and certainly post your opinions and thoughts to the comments section of the website where this blog is available. Or, of course, you can always email me directly anytime at brian@brianmadden.com. And as I said, this is not something where I kind of have an answer already. I really don't know what the right solution is here. I'm really trying to, I don't want to stretch myself too thin and suddenly become not really an expert in any area just because I'm trying to watch so much stuff. But at the same time, I want to make sure that server-based computing is not a sinking ship. And I don't want to stay on a server-based computing bandwagon for a long, long time only to realize that everyone else has moved on to virtualization. And so I think that the future of the industry really is moving in a direction where there will be room for both. And I think certainly we will talk about both, and that's something that we should talk about. So moving on from our conversation about virtualization, I also mentioned in the opening of this show that we would have a conversation with Gus Pinto and Rich Krusko. And Rich is going to talk about virtualizing the Citrix Access Gateway, and Gus is going to talk about some of the tools that he and Rich are putting together onto their website, frameworks.com. So I took the opportunity to join both Gus and Rich via telephone. Thanks a lot, guys, for being here.
Thanks, Brian.
So let me ask, so first of all, you guys are behind the website, frameworks.com, and that's, for people listening, frameworks.com. Tell me a little bit about this website. Your focus is on your applications.
Yeah, it's on the applications at that point.
And these are applications that, are these applications that you're writing that are free for the community, or do you sell these?
They're entirely free. We, as not just the company itself, we focus on the engineers and the people outside. We want the stuff to be free, because I don't really want people to be paying for it. Those people that will end up advocating stuff we do eventually. I don't think like I should be charging 20, 30, 40, 60, whatever amount for an application that made my life easier. And actually, the background of those applications are, they made our life easier, and we didn't just sit back looking in the whiteboard trying to think, what would be cool to make happen or something like this. Most of them just came out of problems we faced or encountered, or just like, you know what, this will be cool.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I use the PN Agent Profile Manager every day. And now looking at your website, it looks like, so what used to be the Profile Manager for PN Agent has been renamed to Access Manager for PN Agent, and it looks like that's on version 2 right now.
Correct, yeah.
So tell me about Access Manager for PN Agent.
Sure, Access Manager for PN Agent, we just gave it a new interface. All the new features you see in there are based on feedback. Like, now we have a password that will allow you to protect your profiles.
Wait, let's back up a second. What the hell is Access Manager for PN Agent? I guess we should start with that.
It's just the easy way for you to add multiple profiles, or I'm not going to call it profiles because people feel confusing. That's the reason why you change the name.
Oh, because they think of Windows profiles.
Yeah.
And not
people are like, hey,
agent. Yeah.
But basically, you can, like, your Citrix login, you can store multiple Citrix logins for multiple sites. Or they don't have to be the same. Like, especially consultants. Like, I'm a consultant myself, so I go out to many different sites, and they have PN agents. So I just add them, those accounts into my Access Manager, and it's there, sitting there. So it's always a click away. I don't have every time to be reconfiguring my PN agent just to access the applications I already have published on those sites. The basic consult.
Okay, so the idea is, so I'm a consultant and I'm using PN Agent for my internal website or for my internal Citrix farm, and maybe my customer has a dev farm and a production farm and everything. So the version of PN Agent that Citrix provides, the version of that client, it only lets us connect to one PN Agent environment at a time. And
Correct.
So this thing is like a little sort of PN Agent profile or PN Agent Access Manager that rides my client and then allows me to load different profiles and different sets of credentials so I can connect into to multiple Citrix PN Agent farms.
You nailed it. Yeah, that's right. So that's basically the original idea. Remember when I first got Profile Manager 1.0 out, I had like 5 farms, and I had like 3 different logins for each farm. So we're talking like 15 logins. And I was going nuts.
Oh, so people can also use it, I guess, to test multiple logins for the same farm.
That is about right, too.
Okay, great. So my admin rights are fine, but if I want to check and see if, like, you know, like I'm using a different XML file for someone else or something, so. Yeah.
You got it. And the first version was very simplistic. I just wanted to solve that first problem, and which sort of did. It works for this purpose, works fine. And a lot of people, like, the first version I released with, like, multiple user interfaces, and new version, I got, like, a lot more stuff from people that emailed me, like, hey, like, I have now, like, 25 profiles. It's kind of really weird to just drop down, just have that drop down, and all those profiles I had read all through. So we had the little search profile box on top, so you can just, as you type, it would just eliminate the ones that just works much like the...
Like the Google's recommendations
things, yeah. Exactly. So it goes like, eliminates the ones that it's not your search immediately, even before you hit search, and you list them on a tree, on a tree that you can collapse and expand. We had a cool feature that, I mean, everyone always asked was to be able to do more than just the login information. They wanted to set up specifics for the sessions, the resolution, the sessions.
So basically, so all the settings that a client could configure, if the client would, if it was configured with the permissions to where the user could override certain settings from the web interface.
Correct.
Then you can set that.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah. Doing this, I also respect the limits of the screen agent site. I'm like, all right, this site won't allow you to save passwords. The reason why I don't deal with the password inside, because we don't need another point of storage or a place where you need to store profiles.
Well, of course, we should all be using Citrix Password Manager for this, right?
Correct. Yeah, we could use the Password Manager.
So talk about now also on your site, you know, I just went there right now. And by the way, I like the logo. It looks sharp.
Nice.
And so you pronounce it, you're calling it frameworkx.com. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, frameworkx, frameworks.
Okay.
That all work.
All right. So I'm familiar with Access Manager, but I also see here a product you guys have called Citrix Info Center for Presentation Server 4. So tell me a little bit about that product.
Yeah. Well, Citrix Info Center, in a simple manner, is BG Info from SysInternals, tailored for Citrix. It has all the basic information about that server, going through the server name, IP address, zone name, farm. The thing I like the most is the fact that I can see my active idle disconnection sessions without opening CNC. It's pretty simple. It just sits there. Now I also show like the CPU, concurrent CPU utilization, and the amount of memory available on your box.
And this generates a graphic image then?
Correct.
And you just drop this on your desktop?
Yeah, and so it basically you can fade it in. Which fades in, you can select if you want to fade on top of all the other windows or not. And you can manually refresh that data, or you can select to auto-refresh, so basically it refreshes every time the data changes. It triggers an event that refreshes the information on that little window.
So I'm going through an install right now, and I see your MSI is called citrixgadget.msi. So
yeah.
can I assume that when Vista comes out, we're going to see an Avalon gadget for this?
You bet. All the ones that you see with the name gadget, even though the one I named the MSI gadget or the application name has a gadget, like the MSN gadget, the mini RDP client gadget, we're all working already on having those ported over to the gadget or to the sidebar, which Microsoft calls on Microsoft gadgets. We already have versions of those. It's pointless to release. I mean, because they keep changing. I mean, if people want, I'll put them out there. Some of them, they're still work in progress.
And so, what else, you guys? You've got other applications. There's this live bandwidth monitor.
Yeah, live bandwidth monitor is a cool one. Actually, I use it a lot, especially to figure out how much bandwidth I'm using on my site. So, live bandwidth is a very simple concept. It was originally based on an open source project called FreeMeter. And it shows your current usage of bandwidth for uploads and downloads on your box. There are several other features you can add. I mean, we added to it. You can take snapshots, like the picture itself, of like to put in graphics and put in your presentations and things like this. You can select the type of units you want to see. If you want to see them on bytes per second or bits per second. you can update the frequency, change the frequency updates itself, or the graphics run through the window, like from a tenth of a second to a second. You can log, actually. There's a log of totals. Basically, we made like two options, like an HTML and a text, and basically it's a sweet tool if you want to really know like real time what's going on in your box. I run it on my Citrix servers just for the simple simplicity of knowing. Hey, some people may say, all right, your box is slowing down. Is it your bandwidth? Are you using everything?
So like I said, or like you were saying earlier, I guess it really is true that all the stuff you have on your site, this is really stuff looks like just kind of little, it kind of fixes little annoyances in your daily job where you were working on something and it's like, man, I need to know this. So you guys being developers, you actually write the software to actually do the things instead of someone like me who just bitches about it but then doesn't actually do anything about it.
Right.
Nice.
You're right, Brian.
I got to tell you, your site looks great. Your graphics look great. Your tools look cool. Looking at your tools, they look like real pieces of software, you know? Like a lot, so many kind of cheap and free things and open source, it looks like no one spent any time on the interface. So not to take away from any of the content of what you guys have within your products, but they look really, really sharp. So
thanks.
I encourage everyone, frameworkx.com, check that stuff out because it looks pretty cool. So now, the second thing I want to talk with you guys about, and this is kind of our whole show today's focused on virtualization, and I just gave sort of a, I don't know, rant, if you will, about virtualization and stuff, but you guys just released a document that's about how to virtualize the Citrix Access Gateway. And so this is something that Rich put together. It's called Virtualizing the Citrix Access Gateway Step by Step. It's a 34-page document that basically is screenshots. If you have a Citrix Access Gateway and you want to make that Citrix Access Gateway available via VMware, this is a 34-page document with screenshots step-by-step-by-step exactly how you can get this done. So my first question to you is, have you guys been sued on this yet? Or
we had debated a few times on whether or not to put that up there, and to what degree do we note in the document of a user violating an agreement in doing this type of method or not. And I think it's pointless to for us to worry about that. There's common knowledge already posted on the internet of how to do this task at hand. And the funny part of it, most of it comes from VMware's own website.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I wrote, and this is something you referenced in your document, I wrote an article, I don't know, a couple months ago.
I know the one.
Yeah, and about the Citrix Access Gateway and virtualizing it and all this kind of stuff. And in the article, I basically said, you know what, not talking about it is not going to make it not true.
Exactly.
So we might as well help people figure out how to do this right. And in fact, I think you're right. When you Google a lot of stuff, you find the VMware forums, and they show you how to do all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, and then I was asked by here and there, people would ask me about that scenario. And I'm like, exactly how do you get around doing that? And a lot of times I'd have screenshots here, just go ahead and do this, or go read this forum here. And if you have any questions, let me know. Well, I came to the point where, like, you know, I need to put a document together that is for how to do this 101. I mean, there are plenty of people that know how to use their Access Gateway, but they're not really familiar with VMware as a product. They want to put a test lab together, or on their laptop or their PC, they just want to put it in an environment together to test on. This document was definitely not for the purpose of production, because there are, you know as well as I do, there are plenty of people contemplating the idea of doing that. I wouldn't recommend it, that's for sure.
Well, and I think you really hit the nail on the head with the testing, because, you know, one of the things that's so great about all the software we work with is we can use tools like VMware and just kind of screw around with it and learn it and figure it out. And the Citrix Access Gateway, especially now with Advanced Access Control and Smart Access, I mean, it's really, really complex. It does cool things.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, the Access Gateway is just the front end. Once you're starting to get into AAC, the Advanced Access Controls, there's a lot of features there you have to start learning and playing with, and you don't want to be doing that in a dev environment or a validation or a test.
Well, the problem, too, is if we're using these boxes in production, then I mean, it's a piece of hardware. So,
exactly.
You know, the new functionality comes out and our boss says, hey, check this out. And we can't, you know, we're going to go to him and tell him we got to buy another one to learn
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And that's an investment that I don't think anybody should have to make.
Okay. So this document shows you how to take the Citrix Access Gateway and which is a piece of hardware, mm-hmm. and virtualize it in VMware.
Exactly.
So I guess, first of all, how is that even possible? Because the Citrix Access Gateway is an appliance.
Well, the Citrix Access Gateway, thank God, was based off of an OEM computer. Most appliances are actually computers at heart anyway, so it depends on how customized they are internally. The Access Gateway is based on a Supermicro computer. Your basic 1U pizza box server. I mean, if you cracked it open, the motherboard in there says Supermicro, the power supplies, etc. It's an x86 piece of hardware. And via NetSix, they actually used VMware to test their builds without actually having to put it onto an appliance. It was developed with that in mind.
And NetSix is the company that Citrix bought,
exactly.
That created the precursor to the appliance that became the Citrix Access Gateway.
Exactly. I think there are a lot of products you could virtualize that are based off of the x86 platform, Intel CPUs, SCSI drives, IDE drives, etc., things of that nature. But if you get into more customized scenarios, like just to sidetrack real quick, there was there are many articles on the internet of how to take a Cisco PIX firewall and install it onto a flash card and stick it into a PCI slot. And now you could take your PIX or multiple PIX and put them on flash cards and run them off of a PC for testing or whatever.
Oh, wow. So you have your laptop PIX.
It's a way more involved process, but it wasn't based off of an x86 platform. So it becomes a little bit harder to do on VMware.
Yeah, I'm looking. You talked about this PIX, virtualizing PIX being a much more involved process. I got your document open in front of me right here, and boy, there's not much to it, is there? I mean, kind of what? So we get a copy of VMware,
mm-hmm.
And we build a new virtual machine.
Oh, and speaking of getting a copy of VMware, I mean, this VMware workstation, and right now they just there's a lot of change going on the marketing side of the products, virtual servers. Free. So the amount of money a company can save for testing, they can install a VMware server for free. They can take an Access Gateway ISO and install it into that free virtual software and do their testing at no cost in hardware or software. So, I mean, it's a win-win.
And so this is something where I guess if there's anyone out there who's unemployed right now and needs to brush up on some relevant skills.
Exactly.
Grab VMware Server for free. You say this, the CAG ISO. Tell me about that.
That's going to be the toughest part for people. If depending on what their access rights are, you have to go to the Citrix website. And you'll have to log in with an account you set up, and that's where you could download the software. If you want to install Presentation Server or any of the Citrix products, they have a section on their site for downloading zip files or ISOs of the products, or you need to get patches of the upgrades. You end up going through what's called MyCitrix, and that's where you'd actually have to obtain an ISO. So unless you already had one of these in-house, it's a little bit harder to get unless you knew somebody.
So I guess really, though, like we were talking about earlier, I guess probably the most likely scenario for someone virtualizing a CAG is you're already a customer and it sort of you have a CAG and you want to learn some of the more advanced features, but your CAG happens to be in production.
Exactly.
So then you can grab your ISO or download the ISO. And like I said, so I'm looking through this. You build a new virtual machine and you specify your memory, specify your networking type and your type of virtualized drives,
mm-hmm.
specify your hard drive capacity.
Yeah, most of the knowledge from doing that was, I had personal knowledge of working with VMware, but most of it came from right there on the VMTN website, VMware's technical network. Those people were on it, and I just basically took the knowledge they put together in text and just threw it into pictures.
Okay, right. And so, So I see. So you build the VM, you specify that we're using the ISO of the CAG software, and then you have to modify the VMX file, which is the text configuration file for this particular VM. So what are we doing when we're modifying that VMX file?
In that section there, basically we're changing, I made a couple changes there just for simplicity of the way I work. When you install a VM by default, it wants to choose a name for the VM files. If you chose like other as your operating system and then like other, the name of this file becomes other. So it becomes, to me, a meaningless thing. I don't know exactly what those files are for. So one of the things I do is automatically try to change that to be something more meaningful. And the only way to do that is to get into the guts of this file and modify it. The other thing we do there, there is a named pipe happening. Basically, we're using another freeware tool where you can allow your Hyperterminal Telnet console to talk to a virtual port in your VM, so there is no physical serial port sitting on this virtual machine for you to connect your Hyperterminal or console application to. So we have to pipe one out, and right in here is where we add that in there. There's one other huge thing I'm doing in here that's the major reason for even doing this to the file. I'm adding two NICs, and those are the Ethernet 0 and Ethernet 1 lines. There's three lines for each. The last line in each one is the virtual device equals E1000. That's denoting it as an Intel NIC. And the access gateway is specifically looking for that type of NIC. And if not present, it's not going to work. So in the GUI of Workstation, you don't have the ability to tell it, I want to install an Intel NIC. But it does support it if you put it, you go into this text file and do a direct edit.
So the bottom line is the NIC that VMware virtualizes by default is not the NIC that the CAG is expecting.
Exactly.
So then it's not going to, I guess, it'll boot, but it won't work because, you know, the CAG ISO does not have drivers for that NIC.
You got it. And that's probably the number one thing that would hold somebody back from attempting this process is the support for that NIC.
And so you change those lines in that VMX file, and that causes VMware to emulate that, and now you boot right through, and off you go.
Exactly. I mean, it's pretty seamless and straightforward. I've done it multiple times. I have seen some people in the forums say they were getting certain errors, not from this document, but just as a general rule. But the information in that in these forums, it's all spread around, so it's not cohesive enough. So you never know what someone didn't do.
And that
was another reason to put this together, just to simplify the exact steps from getting from point A to point Z.
Well, this is great. And then I see you even go through everything and how to connect to it. And so once it's up and it's running, you show people how to, Hyperterm connect to it and configure the network settings.
Yeah, I had a major decision to make when I was putting this document together. I understand that this idea is supposed to be used for testing. And with that, do you really want this thing even to be able to get onto your whatever network you physically have connected? So earlier on in the document, you had to choose what network this thing was going to connect to. I purposely chose local network only, where nothing could attach to the VM remotely whatsoever. That would be a conscious decision that would have to be made after the fact. It'd be just that you could do that right inside of VMware console and change the network type to either be bridged, NATed, or host only.
And that will allow then other VMs they build, like maybe they're going to build a VM of a Citrix server and a VM of a client, and
you got it.
And they can do all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. And then you separate the need for having to deal with different networks and everything, and you're basically localizing your testing. You would build an access gateway VM, you would build an AEC VM, you would build a Citrix VM, and you would build a single server if you want. You could go crazy, but we're talking about depending on how beefy your PC or laptop is. you would probably build a single server farm that would connect to another VM that had the AAC, and then that would connect to your AG.
Okay, so you mentioned AAC. So once you build the CAG in your VM, then it is, for all intents and purposes, a fully functional CAG. So it supports advanced access control and
exactly.
smart access and the clientless, you know, virtualized VNC sessions and all that stuff, yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's completely functional. You could actually, in the document, I only had it configured for one NIC on the very last page. It's the running screen of the admin tool. And from there, you would have to go into the knowledge of, okay, how do I actually configure this thing?
And that, of course, is where you pick up and take, take Roddy Rodstein's document, for example,
mm-hmm.
Smart Access in a Box. You could sort of, as soon as you end up with your document, his would pick up right there, and he
exactly.
could lead you through everything you need to know.
Well,
hey, this, Rich, congratulations. This is an awesome document.
Thanks so much. I was actually worried that there's two trains of thought out there. People who want something very technical, but I don't think there was a lot of technical here. I just think someone wanted a simplistic document that got me from point A to point C without a lot of jargon.
And I'm going to guess it's going to take 10, 20 minutes?
Oh, on my laptop, I would do it. I would have the thing completely installed and running in probably 10 minutes.
Well, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Rich Krusko, the author of the document Virtualizing Citrix Access Gateway Step-by-Step, which is available from frameworkx.com. We'll have the link to that in the program notes. Thanks for having the conversation with me today.
Hey, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it.
And also Gus Pinto, also with frameworkx.com. Thank you so much for talking about the different applications you're writing.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Yeah, so you guys are both going to be here for Bri Forum next week, right?
Yeah, we'll be flying in on Sunday.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing you there, and I'm sure that a lot of people there will have read this document by then, and you guys will probably be fielding lots of questions about this kind of stuff. So
I bet.
We'll have a good one. We'll see you in a couple of days.
Hey, thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.
All right. So long. The last thing that I want to talk about today, as I said earlier, was kind of a follow-up from our conversation on Monday. And on Monday, I asked you to send your emails and post comments about what you think we should do with these podcasts. And we received several comments and several emails, and I really appreciate everyone taking the time to share your opinions with us. And the main thing that we asked for was a couple things. First of all, we asked what we should do with these podcasts as far as content. And the second thing we asked is how often we should have these podcasts. And so let's start with the second one first. I think that I can say very safely that number one, everyone wants to have podcasts as often as possible. But that being said, it seems that it's important to people that we have good stuff to talk about. So we don't want to have a podcast every day just for the sake of having a podcast. But if we can have one maybe a couple times a week or at least once a week, I think people seem like they would really enjoy that. And quite frankly, it's nice because we can track statistics to see how many people are downloading these podcasts. And so we can see very quickly whether it's worthwhile to continue doing and whether people actually listen to this. So we're going to go ahead and do it throughout April. I mean, really, we're going to go for doing two or three podcasts a week for the entire month of April. And then we'll kind of reevaluate at the end of the month and sort of see where we are and see if anyone's listening to these things. And if so, then we'll continue with those. So that being said, we will try to have podcasts as often as possible, but we're not going to put them out there if there's really nothing worth talking about. The second part of the questions that I asked people to share their opinions with was what sort of content we should have in the podcasts. And for this, really, people had a lot of different ideas, and I think I like the ideas. I mean, really, the content needs to be very varied content, and really kind of no different than the content we have on our website. So we want to keep our technical focus. We want to keep our independent and not vendor-biased focus. And we want to talk to technical people and talk to vendors and talk to people in the industry and customers and do all sorts of different things. So a couple people really liked the idea of having the call-in style show. And that's something I think we'll be able to do after Bri Forum. I'm going to guess in the May or June timeframe, we're actually building a streaming media server. And what that will allow us to do is it will allow us to stream these shows live over the internet. And so the way that works basically is I talk into the same microphone here at my house, and then I've got a computer here that encodes that and sends it up to a media server running in our data center. And then that sends all the content out to people who are tuned in live, listening to the show live at that time. So, of course, it also generates an MP3. So if you don't listen to the show live, you can listen to it just like any other podcast. But if you happen to catch the live date, it's almost like a webcast where it's streamed out over the internet to you. And there's only a few seconds delay from the time that I make the sound until the time that it reaches your desktop. And so that would actually allow us to do a live call-in style show. And I think if we did something like that, we'd get a few people here at my place and we all kind of sit around and just discuss the different ideas that we have. So we're going to do that kind of stuff. I mentioned also that we wanted to talk to different vendors, and especially when vendors have new products and want to kind of talk about their products and give briefings about their products, we're definitely going to give the vendors a forum to have those conversations here on this show. There's a couple of things I want to mention about that. First of all, is we do not take any money from vendors to get vendors on the show or to do product reviews or product placements or anything like that. And this is something that we don't do that on our website, and we're not going to do that for this show. So if vendors have products and they want to get on the show, they just have to contact me and tell me about their product. And if their product seems interesting and seems like it's worth talking about, then we'll get some of their technical folks on the phone and we'll have the conversation about their product and how it works and kind of a Q&A and sort of go from there. So I think we can have those conversations with vendors, and that will be very interesting. As I said also, we're going to be having the show at Bri Forum next week, so we'll have broadcasts coming from there, and we'll talk to different people in the industry about the different technologies they're working with and the different products that they're working with. So what's interesting for me, and I guess what's important, is, you know, these podcasts are kind of new for me, and it's actually pretty tough to talk into a microphone because most of the speaking that I do is public speaking where there's an audience and I can sort of play off the audience and see the audience's reactions. And it's really hard to speak into a microphone staring at the wall and not really follow whether people are able to respond to what I'm saying. So I think this is really the second show I've done sort of live on the fly, and I feel like it's a little bit more smooth, at least as far as my perspective, than the first one. And the third one we do on Friday will be better, and we're going to get better and better at this. So again, I really encourage everyone to share your opinions. Let us know what you want to hear in these shows, and I'm going to get better at recording these, and I'll get better at doing interviews, and people will get better at knowing what they want to ask, and I think we're just going to continue to have a really, really fun time. And we will be back on Friday for another show. This show was copyright 2006 by the Brian Madden Company. The music is by The Bots, which is available for free from magnatunes.com.